Welcome to the Pinkleton Pull Aside podcast. On this podcast, let's step aside from our busy lives to have fun, fascinating, life-giving conversation with inspiring authors, pastors, sports personalities, and other influencers, leaders, and followers. Sit back, grab some coffee, or head down the road, and let's get the good and gold from today's guest. Here's Jeff Pinkleton, Executive Director of the Gathering of the Miami Valley, where their mission is to connect men to men and men to God.
Hello, friends. Welcome again today to another episode of the Pinkleton Pull Aside podcast, where we get to talk all things life, leadership, lessons therein. And we do that in the world of sports, of music, of comedy, business, authors, pastors, great testimonies, the like. And today we're landing in a world I like a lot, the sports world. I feel like I'm going back in time with our guests because one of the things over the years I've really grown to love and appreciate is to go back in time on YouTube and look up old 80s, early 90s intro to NBA basketball games with Brent Musburger doing the old, "You're looking live from," and he might have said, "the Forum, the Boston Garden, the Spectrum," and he might have talked about our guest today, Bobby Jones, known for his playing days with the Philadelphia 76ers, world champ, four-time NBA All-Star. And oh, by the way, he happened to play college ball as well at the University of North Carolina. I know when most people hear North Carolina, their heart either gets really excited because they love that light blue color and are big fans, or like me, sadly, I'll admit, I've cheered against teams that North Carolina's beaten a lot over the years. I'll keep those schools nameless for now, but I'm in Big Ten country and I'm an SEC guy, so no reason for me to not love North Carolina. But I'm definitely a fan of Bobby Jones. So welcome, Bobby.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Do you find that happens when people mention North Carolina? It either gets them super excited and they love them, or they've cheered against them because North Carolina's beaten their teams over the years?
No, I don't hear that much, Jeff. What I do hear is people come up to me and say, I love watching you play, but I was always a Celtics fan.
So it goes more to Boston than it does Philly.
Yeah, it's like, why would that interest me? why would you tell me that?
Yeah.
That's great for you. That's fine.
Is it as big a deal to people as I think it has to be that you played at a school that's so illustrious and known? You know, you think college basketball, the first three schools that come to my mind for me are Carolina, Duke, and Kentucky. I mean, there's others, but those three, I think, jump out right away. Kansas probably would be a fourth. Is it amazing to look back and think, wow, I got to play at that school?
Yes, it is. Especially looking back in my life as a high school player, really wasn't highly recruited except regionally in the Southeast. And so, yeah, it was. And then to go to North Carolina, which, you know, I'd grown up in Charlotte watching Davidson, Duke, and North Carolina. In fact, one of my favorite players was for Duke. His name was Hack Tyson. He was a little bit awkward, and I was very awkward when I was watching him. And so to end up going to North Carolina, you know, if you look into the Basketball Hall of Fame, you'll see that North Carolina has more, I think they have more coaches and players in the Hall of Fame than any other school in the nation. But so it was a great training ground for me to be around great players and great coaches.
So I got to say this. I know I'm going to have one of my friends, at least, if not multiple friends, say, "Jeff, I can't believe you said that at the beginning of the podcast. You referenced not being a Carolina fan." I'm good friends with Clark Kellogg, and I'm not an Ohio State guy. And they go, "Wow, why did you mention that to him?" But let me tell you where it kind of goes back to for me, just so you know. 1982, I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the Superdome with my dad, back when tickets could be had through the lottery, not anymore, where it's so much more difficult for regular fans to get to go. And I was a huge, huge, huge Patrick Ewing fan. And that game has a little bit of a famous spin on it in the national championship game. Do you remember where you were when that game took place? You might have been there. You might have been, you know, wherever on the road playing.
Yeah, I think on the road traveling, playing ball.
So what did that mean for you to watch that as a Tar Heel grad, see them win, James Worthy, Michael Jordan hits the shot, all the things that were so significant about that game? Did it look like, yeah, that's a historic moment?
Well, it was, to me, it was just great for Coach Smith. You know, he was such a impactful person in my life, personally and professionally, that I was just thrilled that he had a chance to coach those guys to a championship.
So, Bobby, this next question I want to ask you, I mean in the most complimentary of ways, that you have been tied in, obviously, to Athletes in Action. I'm going to guess at some level maybe you've done some work with FCA or some of the other sports ministries that are out there. Are you almost known to some people now more? They know about you and your faith first and foremost, and basketball is kind of a very secondary thing, or does basketball still lead the way for you when people know of you, get to know you, whatever?
You know, Jeff, it's kind of funny. Basketball kind of leads the way, but it hasn't always been that way. I think when I retired from the Sixers and came back to North Carolina in the late 80s, basketball wasn't televised. It wasn't that popular down south. And in the last 10 years, you know, I'm more recognized as a former Sixer through YouTube and all the other stuff that they show. And I get autograph requests usually about every day through the mail to sign an autograph. And so that's probably the main thing people know me for, I think.
You know, it's funny, as you talk about basketball and television, I have three sons, and one of them 17 and plays varsity basketball. He's a starting point guard, all that kind of good stuff. And he was there at the breakfast. And it's funny when I tell my boys that they only know the NBA the way it is right now, where it's so big, you know, worldwide leader type of deal with sports, next to the NFL, but it's right there. Players are so known. You know, we love our individual players in the NBA. And I said, there was a time and a day and age, I remember like it was yesterday, the 11 o'clock news, I'd be watching the local news, and they would say, okay, we're getting ready to show the score of the Sixers-Lakers game that will be on right after the news. Please look away if you don't want to see the score. And I'm like, how? That seems like that should have been centuries ago. And to me, it feels like, you know, I was a teenager. Wasn't that long ago that the NBA was not getting any kind of TV love.
You know, that's true. And I remember the championship series was on tape delay, you know, back to the East Coast when we played the Lakers. And like, I remember witnessing for the Lord with an interview on CBS right after a game that Julius was a star of the game. And I had hit a big shot at the end of the game and they interviewed me. And I just mentioned that the Lord put that shot in, and they looked like me, like I'd cursed or something. And I've always wondered if that ever made it back to the East Coast on tape delay. I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, it's funny how that stuff goes. I've seen a number of things on the internet where people will talk about something that got left out in an interview or something was said to honor God. And you, most of those things, when you go back and look, it was something somebody bought into. But it's amazing, even on network TV, then and now, how things kind of find their way and God's going to get honor, how he gets honor. So tell us how you came to Christ. What's your come to Jesus story? And right after you tell that, tell us about the great, and I've heard you tell it a couple times, the great Bill Guthridge story from your playing days.
Well, you know, I grew up in Charlotte. I was born in Akron, Ohio, and my dad worked for Goodyear Tire. And
he knew
all over. We lived in Bryan, Texas, New Orleans, Goldsboro, North Carolina, Winston-Salem. And then in the sixth grade, we moved to Charlotte and we stayed here. My dad refused promotions just so my brother and I could play high school sports at the same school and have some settledness in our lives. And I certainly appreciated that for my dad. And we went to a Baptist church here in Charlotte, and they preached the gospel, but I didn't listen to it. It went in one ear, out the other. And you know, I thought being a Christian was being a good person. You know, I thought, well, that's, you know, I'm good enough to get to heaven. And so I didn't think much about it, didn't live my life as a Christian. You know, I got a scholarship to North Carolina, which I, was certainly thrilled with. And the Guthrie story comes in right at this point, because my freshman year, we were doing a study hall in Granville Towers. And Coach Guthrie would always come up every night during the week and check on us to make sure we were studying. And the night he came, this one night he came up, and he would always go to the far end and then work his way back toward the elevators. And when he came onto the floor, word always got around, you know, to act like you're studying if you're not. And, you know, I wasn't studying. And so I got out of bed and got a book, and I sat on my desk and just, you know, looked like I was reading it. And he came in and he asked me how I was doing. I said, I'm doing great, Coach. How are you? And he said, I'm doing well. I see you're studying well. I said, yes, sir. And as I said that, I looked down at my book, and my book was upside down. And he didn't notice that. And at least he didn't indicate that he noticed it. And And so he left and said, have a good evening. I said, thank coach, you too. And I was so excited that I had fooled him that I wanted to show off to my teammates. So I went through the bathroom. We had a suite where we shared a bathroom, and I went through to the next room and were saying to my two other freshman teammates, hey, Coach Carter was in our room and he thought I was studying. My book was even upside down and I totally fooled him. As I was speaking to them, and their eyes were looking past me, just staring at Coach Guthridge, who was in the doorway. He had changed his direction and was standing right there and heard everything that I said. And it really embarrassed me. And he said this to me, he said, Bobby, can I talk to you in the next room? I said, sure. And I just was petrified. What's going to happen? Am I going to be running stadium steps for 2 weeks or getting up at 6 o'clock and running laps? I just didn't know. And we walked through the bathroom to my room, and he closed the door and he said, Bobby, why don't we just act like this never happened? We're going to be together for the next 4 years. And let's just act like this never happened. And when he said that, I was stunned. I said, yes, sir, coach, I'll be happy to forget this. And that was really my first experience with grace. And grace is unmerited favor. It's something that we're given that we don't deserve. And Coach Guthridge gave me grace. He knew I wasn't a bad person, and he knew I wasn't a show-off. But he, by his own decision, he decided to let that go. And right after that point, I continued to develop as a basketball player. My sophomore year, I met a girl named Tess, who's now my wife of 49 years. And Tess was a young Christian, and she was sharing with me about Jesus and how he lives in her heart. And I'm thinking to myself, well, how does this guy who lived 2,000 years ago, how does he live today in her heart? You know, I thought that was kind of odd. But I also thought, you know, this is such a pretty girl. I got to keep dating her. So I just accepted what she said and moved on. And during the time that we dated for about a year and a half, I started to understand scriptures. And the Bible, you know, says in Ephesians 2:8-9, says, for it is by grace you've been saved through faith. And this not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. And at that time in my life, I had made the Olympic team in 1972, my sophomore year. Right before my senior year in college, I decided to ask Tess to marry me. And she had a dad who was a lawyer, and he was very adamant. He said, you know, you're not going to marry my daughter until you get your degree. And so I was a year away. I was majoring in psychology. And so that fall before my senior year, I asked Tess, you know, why don't we get engaged a year and I'll get married after I graduate. And she made this statement to me. She said, Bobby, I don't think I can marry somebody if I don't know that they're a committed Christian. And it really embarrassed me. I said, well, look, we'll talk about it later. And so I went back to my home and I started thinking about what does it mean to be a committed Christian? And I, you know, again, I tried to rationalize, well, I've never killed anybody. I've been a pretty good person. I haven't done a whole lot of bad things. I've actually gone to hospitals to visit kids and, you know, try to help people. And, you know, but I understood that it was not, it's not works that get us to heaven. It's the grace of Christ, the atoning blood that he shed on the cross for our sins. You know, basketball, we call them fouls. You get 5 fouls or 6 in the NBA, you're out of the game. In life, you get 1 foul, the Bible says, you're separated from God. And so, you know, I understood those concepts, but I had a head knowledge, but never a heart acceptance of what that really meant in my life. Because my fear was if I became a Christian, I'd have to be a missionary somewhere. I didn't want to go to Africa or Asia or somewhere to witness for the Lord. And, you know, when you're young, you're kind of dumb. And so I didn't ever think that the Lord would use me in the NBA as a missionary. And that's what he did. I finally, at that night, when I was thinking about, you know, being a Christian, before I prayed, I thought, I'm a very kind of bottom line person. I thought, well, you know, my goal was to play 7 years in the NBA. And if I do that, that's great. But, you know, what else do I have? You know, if I become a Christian and maybe don't play in the NBA, I've got eternity in heaven with God. And so, you know, I was too dumb to figure out he could do both, you know, so... but anyway, I bowed my head and said, Lord, ask you to forgive me of my sins. Show me that you're real in my life. Help me to live as a Christian in a world that looks down upon Christians. And he did that. You know, he answered that prayer. The next morning, I was appreciative of the things that I'd always taken for granted that I had parents who loved me, raised me right, and coaches. You know, I got a scholarship that my parents didn't have to pay for to play basketball at one of the great universities. You know, from that point, I started to grow. And as a Christian, like all of us, we're not there yet, you know, as far as perfection in our lives. I remember that senior year, I used some profanity that I wasn't proud of. And I asked the Lord to take that away from me. And he did. I mean, as soon as I asked that, it was gone. And, you know, so we got my wife and my girlfriend and I got married the next year after I graduated. And we've been living ever since, trying to honor the Lord in our lives and seeing what he's doing in our lives. And so it's been a blessing to know that he's given not 7 years, he gave me 12 years of professional basketball. And and also I have an eternity with him in heaven when this shell of a body decays.
It's amazing as you talk about that. I'm just thinking, and not that what I'm going to say is a blanket statement, but I feel like a lot of people have this dream or idea of what they want to do, wherever they come to know Jesus, what they ultimately want to do maybe takes a detour and God gives them a desire and a love for that, whatever it was. It's not usually a step up. You weren't thinking like long time NBA career, and yet that's the platform God gave you. When I think back to you, I think rebounder, I think incredible defender. I think back in that day and age, for a guy your size, you passed the ball really well. I kind of remember you sweating a lot. Is that true? Do I remember you having like that sweaty head like nobody's business with the free throw line, shooting free throws?
Yeah, I did sweat a lot. I felt like I worked hard out there.
Yeah, you earned it.
You know, at North Carolina, I mean, those practices were really hard, and I learned intensity. And so, you know, one thing that happened also, my junior year in college, I had a seizure. Hmm. And they didn't know what it was, but I had one in Denver also. And then I had a second one in Denver. And through that, I had to take medication. They said I had epilepsy. And as I look back on it, it may have been epilepsy. It may have been an allergic reaction to some ingredients and some things I shouldn't have been drinking, like soda pop. But I do think that the Lord watches over us and protects us. And he has done that in my life. And you know, to look back and to think, you know, the things that have happened to me, to still have a career like I had, I'm certainly thinking it's not by anything I did. You know, the Lord did give me a long body and a thin body that can run up and down. I was an average shooter, but I had a high percentage because I didn't take bad shots. and I had the freedom with my Carolina coaches who taught me to give that help side defense to go for a steal or a block shot or take a charge on somebody else. And that was continued at Denver with Larry Brown, a Carolina guy, and then at Philadelphia with Billy Cunningham, a Carolina guy. So the Lord just ordered my steps as far as my career path went to where I was on teams with great scorers. And I didn't need to be a great scorer because I wasn't a great scorer. So I could do the things that he had designed me to do.
So what does life look like for you today, Bobby? Obviously, you're pretty committed to kingdom work, but what is it looking like, your assignment at this stage, kind of day in, day out, you know, tied to family, so on and so forth?
Well, my day mostly is focused around, you know, honoring the Lord with my life. My hobby, I would say, is my yard work. My wife and I work in the yard a lot. We have 8 grandchildren, and we spend a lot of time with them. The older I get, the more I sense that a lot of people don't know about Jesus. And so I will share with people, you know, about the Lord whenever I can. For instance, I had to get my car worked on. So I asked a mechanic, I said, you know, do you know about Jesus? And he says, yes, I do. And so he was a Christian. He knew about Jesus. And I was taking my car into another shop and asked a guy, I said, the station is only about a mile from a really great church that that serves both African-American and white people. And I said, I'd like to invite you to it. And so he said, yeah, I'd consider that. Thank you. Wow. So just trying to be, I've always been kind of a shy, introverted person. I'm just trying to be a little bit more bold in my life. And, you know, my wife, she's really a great spiritual lady. And about 2 years ago, maybe 3 now, she asked on Mother's Day that the entire family would memorize Psalm 91. Wow. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. And it's like 17 verses. And we all did that. And that has been a great comfort for me also, to know that I have some scripture in my life and in my mind that I can I can pull up, you know, and like I shared earlier, Ephesians 2:8-9, and then the next verse after that, 10, tells us that he has works planned for us to do as we accept him as our Savior. And so he gives us a direction and a purpose in our lives as we become Christians.
I'm really curious. I'm kind of having this picture in my head. We talked about you being in and around and living a lot of your life in Charlotte. There seems to be, and I don't want this to come off too haughty, there seems to be a Billy Graham thing about you. As I'm listening to you talk and I hear you talk, there's kind of a simplicity, but a not resting on what God's done in your life up to this point and really wanting to honor God with your life. I listened to a sermon of his over the weekend, Saturday morning, as I was getting ready to preach somewhere Sunday. And I'm always amazed at the simplicity of what he said. It was not this earth-shattering whatever. He was just a guy that clearly was used by God. Does that click with you at all? I see some comparisons between you and Billy Graham.
That's a very nice compliment. I met Pastor Graham, and I was actually at one of his crusades and spoke when he was in Chapel Hill years ago. But, you know, I don't... I'm not a preacher, and I don't. But what I really think is that people in our society, they don't want to hear the gospel. They want to see it. Mm-hmm. They want to see it lived out through people. And so my guidance in my life is to try to do the right thing. You know, try to honor God with what He's given me, and to be an encouragement to others, and to walk in a way that would shine light on a dark path.
So what does life outside the home for you look like now, as far as, like I said, tied to sports ministry kind of stuff, Athletes in Action, which we love. We've had their president, number two guy, Mark Householder, and Jerry Denninger on here. Jerry's a good friend. How does your time look investing in athletes, coaches, whoever today? I know Cody Zeller obviously is a guy you spent a lot of time with. I'm at the radio station here, Rise FM, where his wife, Leanna Crawford, has done some shows, and she was there with him when I met you in Indianapolis. So talk about that, what that looks like, who maybe people you spend time with in and around Cody Zeller, and then certainly tell the story about your first lunch with him related to a game I like a lot called ping pong.
Yeah, well, you know, Cody, I'm not around that many people. I'm a kind of a quiet person. We, you know, certainly have friends and enjoy them, and family, really, mostly. I have three children, two live here with three children each. So I have six grandchildren within a mile and a half of me. So
wow.
Spend a lot of my time with those kids and certainly enjoy them. But, you know, I had an occasion with Athletes in Action, or through Athletes in Action, to meet Cody. He had been drafted by the Hornets, and he came to Charlotte, didn't know anybody. And so they asked me, well, you know, can you just sort of invite him over and meet with him, just to try to give him some company. So I did. The first time we met, we met at a Chinese restaurant, and I was taken by how much he ate. He was a big eater, and we talked about things. And I noticed that he was writing down on his phone the address of the restaurant. He wanted to come back to that at some point. But I said, "Well, you'll have to come over to the house and at some point." And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, bring your ping pong paddle." And he looked at me kind of strangely. He said, "Me?" I said, "Well, you know, don't you have a ping pong?" Because I had started playing ping pong table tennis a couple of years ago through Rick Carlisle.
Yeah.
And he had really encouraged me to get into it, and I really enjoyed it. In fact, I had a robot that I would hit with in my garage. And so Cody came over, and I just smoked him really badly. But he took it well, and he eventually got his own paddle and has really come along as a table tennis player.
You know, it's funny. I'll never forget when I came up to you and started talking to you after that breakfast for the NBA All-Star weekend. When we started talking about ping pong, your face like lit up. Like you could tell you really enjoy it. And you talked about, would you say you had to get rid of that machine because you were either doing it too much or you started hurting your shoulder or something like that?
Yeah. It was sort of my winter workout. In my garage, I'd set that thing up and I'd hit for like 20 or 30 minutes, just backhands and forehands and, you know, side shots. And my shoulder started hurting. I got really good at table tennis, but it was at a cost. So I had to get rid of the machine and just let my shoulder recover. And I do enjoy table. I'm not that good at it, but I do have a long reach and decent reactions at my age. So it's fun to play. My children play, and it's a great sport for the grandchildren also. So I've enjoyed it a whole lot. And in the Cody and when he's come, when he comes over, we do that, and we also do play a lot of disc golf. Mm. People call it frisbee golf, but we play disc golf, and I have a couple of baskets in my yard and a couple of holes that we enjoy. So that's been fun just to have. I like to stay active, and my grandkids are starting to get into basketball and baseball, and you know, I have a little court that we shoot at, and so you know, it keeps me young and keeps me around the young people. That I enjoy that.
No doubt the hardcore disc golfers are a whole different breed. It's fun to think about, picturing you doing that with kids, grandkids, whatever. So tell me about this. I've heard before from you, I either read it in an article, I heard you share it sometime, about you only play basketball initially to appease your dad. So in a day and age where youth sports is so big, I've always tried to be careful with things I want for my kids, that it needs to be things they want, not just me wanting it for them. Give us a story about a time in your life where you and your dad maybe weren't on the same page with that. And then what was it look like when you turned the corner with your dad and you did obviously fall in love with basketball?
Well, I would have to say that my brother was a really good athlete, still is. My brother Kirby, he was 2 years ahead of me. He played basketball at the University of Oklahoma. And you know, when we were growing up, he played Pop Warner football and baseball and basketball. And I didn't want to do any of those things. We lived in Charlotte. We had a little basement. We had a little bumper pool table. And I just would come home after school and play that all the time. I just loved playing it by myself. And so I got so good, nobody in my family could beat me at it. But my dad knew that I was going to be tall. I was starting to, you know, had big feet and big hands. So he made me go out in the backyard every day during school, after school, and I had to do like 25 hook shots, free throws, different kind of things. And you know, I kind of resented that. I didn't like doing it. And I think the worst thing was he would throw me passes. He'd have me post up and he'd throw me passes, and they'd be bad passes. And I think, why are you throwing me such a bad pass? And he said, well, you know, you're not going to get every good pass when you play basketball. You might got to be able to handle the bad passes too. And he had played at Oklahoma also. In fact, he got to the NCAA finals in 1947, I think it was, with OU. They lost to Holy Cross and Bob Cousy. But so he knew what he was talking about, and he knew that I could be a good player at some point. I didn't really want to be a good player. You know, by high school, I was tall and I could jump pretty well and I was having success. So, you know, in any environment, you want to fit in some way. And, you know, for high school, I didn't fit in with the academic kids or the social kids or the wild group. So athletics was sort of my way to be accepted. And so I continued with basketball and track. I did high jump also. And that's really where it all started. And then I went to North Carolina and played. And I'd have to say that I don't know that I ever really was in love with basketball. I certainly liked the game, and I enjoyed playing because I was always on great teams, you know. And I thank the Lord, you know, we won a state championship in high school, and we had players who went on to play other places. And in college, you know, we went to the Final Four 1 year, and then with Denver, with David Thompson and Dan Issel, and a lot of great players, and then Philly. You know, so never a losing season. So I thank the Lord knew that, you know, let's keep this guy interested. You know, so I was always on a winner, and that was a lot of fun. I can't imagine teams that, you know, to play an 82 game schedule and lose most of those games. That would really be tough. So I was just thankful that he put me in the right place.
So interesting to hear someone who's had your credentials who says, I don't know that I ever really loved it. I liked it. I was on some good teams. God bless you. Yeah, I mean, think about how that sounds to hear it. I mean, is that pretty wild when you think about the people who dream about that and you're like, yeah, I don't know that I ever loved it, but.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I look back, you know, my life as a fifth grader or fourth grader, and I think I was the last guy usually picked for any kind of playground sport.
Wow.
You know, not that fast and all this. And, you know, I just wasn't that interested in it. And, you know, to know that the Lord, I think the Lord just looked down and said, look, let's just pick this guy out. You know, he's not a very good athlete. Let's see what we can do with him. Use him for our kingdom. And so he did. He got me to the NBA, got me to help start one of the first chapel programs in the league and, you know, to try to be a witness to my teammates. So, yeah, you never know. You know what the Lord's going to do with what. So he's done a lot with me.
Well, let's jump to a thing I like to call the rapid five. These are five really quick, light, fun questions that are going to come pretty fast. What's first thing that comes to your mind? Bobby, what's your favorite childhood snack or cereal?
Probably barbecue potato chips.
Oh, well, those are good. Those last way beyond childhood. You can eat those forever. Yeah. Is there a particular brand you really like?
Wise potato chips.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Isn't it W-Y-S-E?
Oh, W-I-S-E.
Wise potato. Okay. Okay. I'm a fan of the, Miss Vicky's barbecue chips.
Okay.
They're the kettle chips and barbecue. Really good. What's your favorite book outside the Bible that you most have or want to gift to other people?
Pilgrim's Progress. There's a book out. It's an illustrated Pilgrim's Progress. And I can't remember the author of it, but it's got beautiful illustrations in it. And it has, in the back of the book, it has footnotes that explain all the things that would be confusing to anybody who tries to read it, because it's a 400-year-old book. In fact, I read it probably once a year.
Wow.
It's so encouraging on how, you know, the pilgrims walk. His name is Christian. He tries to walk to get to the eternal city, the celestial city, and all the obstacles that he goes through to get there. And it's just a very well-mentioned book.
You know, it's so funny about you saying that. I am a huge nonfiction guy. It is everything in me to read fiction. And I think I posted something on social media about this a while ago. Like, I'm trying to get better at it. And no matter what, I can't do it. The last fiction book I read last year, Pilgrim's Progress. So
can I go down and get the book? I want to show it to you so I get the author's name.
Oh, it's isn't it John Bunyan?
It's John Bunyan, but there's like 10 different Pilgrim's Progress as you can read.
Oh, check that out and make sure we get that at the end. I want to take a look at that. We'll keep going and then we'll come back to it. Let me ask you this. So if your family, you got your 8 grandkids, you guys are going on vacation somewhere and you move along and one of your grandkids has to go to the bathroom and you're like, well, we're getting ready to stop for lunch in about 10 minutes, but we got to go now. We'll go ahead and eat right here. And you see these three restaurants. And I'm going to change one of them because you're on here, because I know this one's in your neck of the woods. And you see on this sign, you see McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, and Cookout. I know Cookout's in North Carolina. Which one of those do you go to?
We go to Cookout.
Oh!
Christian Company, they have Bible verse on their cups. So, yeah.
Yeah. I usually have In-N-Out on there, but I changed it because you're in North Carolina. And Cookout, I say, I'm from Springfield, Ohio. That's where I live. And I'm like, Cookout was made for Springfield. It's cheap. You can get a corn dog as a side item. I mean, who's serving corn dogs as a side item?
The corn dogs, yeah. They make their milkshakes.
Oh, great milkshakes. Man, I have a friend, Bruce Woman. When he listens to this, I hope he does, he will be super pumped up that you mentioned Cookout on here. So,
banana milkshake.
Yeah. Chocolate banana. That's what I'm getting. So, anyway, Bobby, what is the movie that every time you were to stumble across it, it pulls you in and you have to stay with it?
Well, my wife and I are both black and white movie fans from the old 40s, 30s, and 50s.
Okay.
So The Best Years of Our Lives is probably one of my favorite
best
movies.
Best Years of Your Life. Who's in that?
I think Virginia Mayo is one person in there. Can't think of the other guy.
That's something I wish I appreciated more than I do.
Won the Best Picture. It won like, I think, 7 Academy Awards. It's a story of, you know, three veterans from World War II coming back and trying to adjust to a different America.
Okay. I wish I had more of a desire for that. I had something, there's part of me knows it needs to spark, but I'm like, I wish I got into movies. I love watching old Three Stooges stuff. So, I mean, that's enough in the genre. I should get into it. So,
you know, there's a lot of movies that we've come across. Like, here's one, The Sword in the Desert. It's a story, it's a fictional story of, a tanker guy bringing in some Israeli immigrants before it became a nation, and Britain was trying to stop them. And it's you know, there's no profanity, there's no sex, it's all adventure, and it's just it's a wonderful history of what happened and how the nation of Israel came about.
Oh wow! And what's it called again? Say it again, Bobby.
It's called Sword in the Desert.
Sword in the Desert. That sounds familiar. I'm gonna have to check that out. I want you to speak to, because we live in such a unique time, and I don't think this is going to change anytime soon, but with youth sports, the AAUs, the travel teams, What is it like to be a three-sport athlete, play every season versus being a one and stick with it? How do you feel about that? You know, you think about, you said you got grandkids now starting to get into basketball, baseball, whatever. What is your thought? I mean, I know every kid, every situation is unique, but playing one sport at some point pre-college and just sticking with it versus being three sports, travel teams, AAU, all that. What's your thoughts there?
I really am a fan of multiple sports. I participate in track. In fact, in high school, I did AAU track. And I didn't do AAU basketball. I went to the national finals in track and finished third in the high jump my sophomore year. And that is a better memory than most of my high school basketball experiences. So
really?
I enjoy other sports. And my kids, my grandkids, play other sports. One of them loves baseball, but he also plays basketball. My sons, when they were growing up, I didn't let them play any organized sport until they were like in the fifth or sixth grade. It was something where, you know, I think people take it a little too seriously these days on trying to get a jump on experience. I didn't start playing basketball until I was in the sixth grade. So, and that was church league. And, you know, I turned out okay. So, you know, I think we take it a little too beyond what it should be.
If you had one piece of advice for parents, especially if, say, let's go younger than me, let's say preteen kids, what would you say to them to challenge them, encourage them about their youth, their kids, and sports?
I would say a couple of things. One, get a jump rope and teach your children how to jump rope. Two, I would say play catch with them. Here at my house with my grandkids, whenever they come to our den, I've got these little cloth, they look like frisbees, but they're little cloth discs, and we just throw them back and forth. So they're designed not to break anything. So because we've broken plenty of things with other balls, we use these instead, and we play pig. So if you miss one, you get a letter, and it just teaches the eye hand. And those are the two things, you know, the eye hand, and then your strength of your legs, that will help anybody who becomes an athlete a little bit later on.
What about as far as keeping it in a proper perspective and not making it more, as you alluded to, than what it is?
Yeah, well, the term burnout is something that they'll be facing if they start too early. And I've seen that with so many kids as coaching at Charlotte Christian School for 15 years. You know, just enjoy your children. Let them enjoy what they want to do and encourage them with it. But don't travel this travel stuff. I have a son-in-law who coaches baseball. He coaches his two sons in baseball. And they don't do travel, and I admire them for it. People are going to say, "Well, you're not getting the best competition." Well, you're going to be as good as the Lord will have you to be if you work on it. And you don't have to worry about the best competition. I remember back in the day, 15, 20 years ago, when I was at Charlotte Christian, people said, "Well, you know, nobody's going to choose a kid from a Christian school because they don't play in the competition." Well, you know, here's Steph Curry and Todd Fuller, All-American NC State, and Anthony Gill, you know, all these guys come out of just one school, one Christian school, and there's many like that all across the nation. So don't believe what the world says about having to play travel ball or spending all your money on trying to get your kids recognized.
Boy, I think that could slide under for some people and they miss that. I love what you said about how they're going to go and it's going to go however God wills it. And I think we so often forget that. And that's an area for most of us. I think whether we're the participant or we're the parent of a participant, we think it's all about our hard work. And well, it's up to me. So I got to do what I can. And we're not letting God be God.
Yes, absolutely. I don't, you know, like I said, my own experience proves that out, you know, just not played very much until, again, the sixth and seventh grade. In fact, I made the seventh and eighth grade teams only because I was tall. I wasn't that good, but, you know, again, you know, the Lord provided good coaches and, you know, let me develop in my own natural way without having to try to burn myself out.
Wow. We're ahead to the close here. I have a couple more left. Let me ask you this. Give us and I know you only played with Charles Barkley for what, two seasons? And I love Dr. J. I was a huge Dr. J fan as a kid. Barkley is probably, if I had a Mount Rushmore of four people, I'd love to grab a bite to eat with and just talk all kinds of stuff from any and all world sports, music, you name it, Barkley would probably be on the list. Give us a story that maybe you've experienced that nobody would know about that would be pretty fascinating about either one of those. Or if you got a quick one, give us one about both of them.
Well, yeah. Well, I'll give you two about Charles. One, when he first came to the league, his training camp, he came in at 305 pounds. And Julius and I were just amazed at how he could run up and down. And we didn't think he'd last very long because of the weight he was carrying. But he set a screen on me one day. And, you know, usually when I get screened and I'll run into it fairly hard, I'll get knocked down, or I've actually been knocked out before. But he was so, I don't want to say fat, but overweight, that he just absorbed me into his body. It was like going into a marshmallow. And I was just stunned that it was not, you know, it was nothing. I just tried to claw my way out of his body to get around the screen. But the first year with Charles, he came down one time in Philly on a fast break in a game, and he went to dunk it. And as he dunked the ball, a guy from the other team tried to stop him, but he fell and actually cut Charles's legs out from underneath him. And so Charles just hung onto the rim, but the momentum of the other guy made Charles move around and swirl back after he dunked it. And when he did that, he actually pulled the backboard, the whole back section off, and the foundation, he lifted it up and shifted it 6 inches. And it took about 15 minutes for about six guys with crowbars to jimmy the thing back to where it was, because there were 3,000 pounds of weight on the bottom, as the ballast of that stanchion, I guess they call it. And he changed the NBA because from that point on, they added 6,000 pounds instead of 3,000 because of what he had done to move that backboard and to shift it off center.
That is so amazing. I did not think your Barkley story about running into him was going to go where it was, that you got absorbed into him like a marshmallow. That is hilarious. In this season of life where you are, Bobby, God, I don't think there's any doubt, continues to work on you. You continually to be open to it. You're letting God shape and mold you, digging into the Word, living a life you're living. What is he trying to bring out in you? What would you say at this point you are becoming through Holy Spirit's work?
Well, somebody who wants to try to hide God's word in his heart, and somebody who wants to live a life dedicated to him. I've always wanted to do that. And, you know, again, my shyness or my introvertedness seems to have prevented that in some areas, but I just seek to be bolder in my faith and my sharing Jesus with the UPS guy or whoever I might see, just in a way that is not offensive, but can give them an opening to understand that Jesus is the way to heaven.
Amen. Amen. Well, Bobby, I appreciate your graciousness, your generosity with time, being gracious and allowing me to acknowledge being a Georgetown Hoya fan back in the early 80s as they played the Tar Heels. I'm hoping we end up around each other at some point. I'll bring my University of Tennessee white with the orange tee, ping pong paddle, and I'll be prepared for you in a way that Cody Zeller was not.
Okay.
All right. Blessings to you, Bobby.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on the Pinkleton Pull Aside podcast. You can reach Jeff at gatheringmiamivalley.org or find us on Facebook at the Gathering of the Miami Valley. Join us again next week for another honest and rich conversation.
The Rise FM Podcast Network.